She stands in the shadows, the young slave girl, watching as her mistress gazes through the stone arch of her upstairs window. The woman does not speak, but the sadness in her eyes says it all. The woman has stood by that same window hours every day and long into the evening as silken blue skies unfold into purple darkness. Only then does the woman turn her back to the window. Only then does she catch the eye of this young slave girl who has waited patiently in the shadows, yearning to offer some word of comfort to the woman who watches and waits. There have been many nights when the woman has watched out the window for her husband's return, while he has been off fighting yet another battle. He is a great war hero, commander of the king's army, a colleague of the king, a national hero. The woman is used to waiting by the window for his return. But her husband fights a different sort of battle these days. The slave girl knows all about battles and war. She herself is a victim of one of the many battles fought between this country where she now lives and her beloved homeland, Israel. Snatched from her family, treated as an object, a prize, forced into becoming a slave to the wife of the man who was ultimately responsible for her capture. Yes, she knows all about this man for whom the woman by the window waits. But the slave girl does not hate the man, which is surprising, for she has every reason to hate him, to hate the man Naaman, whom she does not hate. She has lived among this family long enough to know that Naaman is respected and loved by all the people, for he is a good man, just and fair. The slave girl does not blame Naaman for her fate. She has watched him come home from battle. She has watched the way he treats his servants with kindness, watched the way he looks at his wife with love and affection. She knows that he loves his wife because he speaks to her kindly and with tenderness. She knows that he loves his wife because with all the military commanders at his beck and call, it is to his wife that he turns when he has a decision to make, when he does not know what to do. He speaks to his wife, and he listens to her. And the slave girl knows enough to know that it is not always the way of a husband and wife to listen to one another, as Naaman and his wife do. In the past year, however, a terrible enemy has come between Naaman and his wife. The enemy has slithered into their lives like a deadly serpent, slowly unleashing its poison into Naaman's veins. Naaman, whose very name means pleasant, gracious, beautiful, has become anything but these things. The venom erupts in lumpy tumors that multiply on Naaman's face and neck and his arms and legs until he is no longer recognizable, even by those who are closest to him. His skin, thick and putrid, peels off in chunks, leaving open wounds that invite every kind of infection and stink with a stench that makes a person gasp for breath. The enemy has a name, leprosy. Leprosy, the scourge for which there is no cure. The leprosy not only leaves a body disfigured, it alters one's very way of life. The slave woman remembers the the colonies of lepers back in her homeland of Israel, pitiful clusters of miserable outcasts, banned from contact with healthy people, forced to live outside the city gates and to call out in their plaintive voices, unclean, unclean, whenever anyone got in range, warning people to run, run, run for your life. The lepers are coming. A person with leprosy is quickly banished from home and career, can no longer participate in worship or any of the religious ceremonies. Naaman is now one of these lepers, and he is about to lose everything. Soon he will no longer be able to stand in the presence of the king, nor to lead his troops into battle. What will become of Naaman when he is only Naaman the leper, and no longer Naaman the Great, or simply just Naaman? Naaman and his wife do not sit side by side, her head on his shoulder, holding hands as they often used to do. They are too afraid of the disease. And what would happen to the children if Naaman's wife also became sickened with this illness, and then both of them forced from their home, as Naaman soon will be? It is too much to consider such a fate, but they cannot take that chance. So as the leprous tumors multiply and his skin begins to rot, Naaman keeps a distance from his wife, and that alone is almost as bad as death. The slave girl sighs as she helps her mistress prepare for sleep. The woman undoes her hair, which tumbles like a shimmering waterfall down her back. As the girl runs a comb through her long, wavy curls, she remembers how she used to do this for her own mother. And she imagines her mother so far away, her heart aching for her eldest daughter, not knowing what has become of her since the enemy took her and carried her here to this house, to these people. The girl has grown close to Naaman's wife, not as close as to her own mother, never as close as that, but close. Perhaps it was this that gave her the courage to speak up as she had. Perhaps it was the sorrow she'd seen in Naaman's eyes as he nodded goodnight to his wife from a distance every night. This is a man worth saving, she had thought. And then something deep inside the girl had bubbled up, and the words spilled from her mouth before she could stop them. If only my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. And then she'd had to explain to the woman that this prophet Elisha was one who spoke for God, the God of the girl's ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who had delivered her people from slavery in Egypt and brought them back here to their promised land, the God of her faith, the God of creation, the one true God of heaven and earth. The woman had not chastised her nor ordered her to be quiet, but had listened intently as the girl spoke. And then the woman, her eyes brighter than they'd been in months, ran after Naaman, her husband, Naaman the Great, Naaman the leper, and told him what the girl had said. Naaman did not even hesitate, but ran straight to the king and told him what this Hebrew slave girl had said about the prophet of God who could cure him of his leprosy, give him back his life, and make him whole again. That had been weeks ago. Within days, Naaman had left the city with a letter from the king in his hand, his chariots and horses laden down with riches, hoping to be healed. Stories had trickled back to Naaman's homeland and to his wife. how the king of Israel had turned Naaman away, convinced that his request was some kind of trick, how the prophet Elisha had summoned Naaman, and how Naaman had stomped off in rage, furious at the lack of respect shown him by Elisha, who did not even come out to greet the great warrior. So Naaman had refused to do the simple task Elisha had required. Wash myself 7 times in the Jordan River when the rivers of my own land are far superior, Naaman had railed. The servants sent word back to their fellow servants back home, and Naaman's wife had wept at the stubbornness of her husband, though she suspected it was fear that had made Naaman react in such an undignified way. There had been no more word after this. Naaman's wife confided her own fears to the slave girl. What if your God does not heal my husband? And why would he? Since we worship other gods, why would your God care what happens to us, we who do not even believe? And the slave girl had opened her heart to her mistress. My life is not what I would have expected, she told Naaman's wife. As a child safe in my own home, I imagined a life different than what I now have. I dreamed of my own husband and children, a long, simple life watching my grandchildren grow. I did not think that I would help to raise another woman's children. I did not think that I would be a servant to the wife of the man whose armies have beat our own. I did not know that I would never see my mother or father or brothers or sisters again. I could never have imagined growing old in a foreign land, so far away from my own home. I have had to give up all of my dreams, but I have not given up my God. But why, Naaman's wife had asked her, why do you still believe in a God who allows such things to happen to you? And how can I believe that such a God would answer my prayers and not your own? The girl had wondered this herself many times, so she was ready with an answer. Faith does not come from getting our own way in the world, she had told the woman gently. If that were so, then what would be the need of faith? Faith is trusting in a larger view of life and in a God who is not guided by our whims and desires. I do not believe that God allows our hardships to happen out of unkindness or lack of caring. I believe that God is greater than all the sorrows of this world, and that God can bring good out of every circumstance, no matter how harsh it may seem at the time. The girl fingered the edges of a faded worn shawl that she often wrapped around her shoulders in the cool of an evening like this. This shawl, she said, is the only keepsake I have from my family. It belonged to my mother and to her mother before then. It has been passed down through generations of my family. This shawl reminds me of the story of my people, the Hebrew people, the people of Israel. The various threads of the shawl weave together to make something greater than any one thread, something strong and lasting and beautiful. It is like that, the story of my people. The story of my people is the story of a people who believed in God when no one else did. It is the story of a people who believed in God when all seemed lost. It is the story of a people who have been continually crushed by the world, but who have never given up. The story of my people is one that began long ago and will continue long after I am gone. I am but one thread woven in among all the others that make up the story. The shawl would not be complete without my thread. God weaves the stories of our lives into one story, into God's story. "You see," said the girl, "it is not so much true that God is part of my story as it is true that I am part of God's story. This is the God in whom I believe." She paused then briefly. She said, "I do not have a daughter to whom I can give this shawl and pass along the story of my people, the story of my faith." She slipped the shawl from her own shoulders and she wrapped it around the older woman's. "I will give the shawl to you, and you can give it to your daughter, and she to hers someday. God has already woven you into the shawl. You see, now God's story is your story to tell." "I will do my best to tell your story, my story, God's story," the woman said to the girl, tears sparkling in her weary eyes. She held the edges of the shawl in her hands, running her fingers over the threads. "Whether I not or not I get what I want, I will tell God's story." Just then, a loud cry from the outer courtyard shattered the air. The slave girl and the woman ran to the window side by side. "Our Lord Naaman returns," a sentry called as people poured from their homes out into the streets. Streaming down the road outside the gates, torches pierced the darkness, and the sound of chariot wheels and galloping horses rolled like thunder along with the shouts of people, joyful shouts, and rising above them all came the voice of Naaman calling for his wife. The slave girl followed the woman down the stairs and out the door, but when she saw Naaman striding across the courtyard, she stepped back into the shadows and she watched. She stood and watched this young slave girl as Naaman, the great Naaman, reached out his arms for his wife. And she saw that it was Naaman in the light of the flame. His face was beautiful and clean. And he held out his arms to his wife, and his arms were strong and clear and clean and smooth as a young boy's arms. He held out his arms to his wife, and she ran to him, and she put her arms around her husband. And as she did, she wrapped the shawl around them both. Will you pray with me? Lord, our lives do not always turn out as we would have dreamed them to be. But our threads are part of your story. And you need each of us to weave them together into a beautiful gift. The story of your love for us. The story of life. It is the story that we tell in the name of the one who gives us all life, even Jesus Christ, our Savior. And let all God's people say,